important to remember that the first proposal for nuclear technology in Iran was actually made by the United States when the Shah was in power.
We persuaded the Shah, who was our puppet. We controlled him. We sold him airplanes. We sold him munitions. He didn't need to. Nobody was going to attack Iran. But this is a way where our military-industrial complex makes money.
A red line should be drawn right here.
I think the Israelis are paranoid and terrified and looking for someone to blame, and so they're blaming Iran.
In spite of all these contradictory statements by Israeli authorities, it's Iran that is facing the strictest sanctions and international threats. That said, it seems that the zero hour has already passed, and Iran doesn't take the threats and sanctions seriously.
Is my voice level okay?
Well, you're basically, in different words, asking the same question.
Speak English. I can't understand.
My pleasure.
My activities in Iran were of two kinds. First, academic activities, including research and planning for the Ministry of Science. I was also the chancellor of Abu Ali Sina University in Hamadan. These were my academic activities. I also engaged in nuclear activities, which was my specialty. As I came back to Iran, I began to establish and, in fact, complete the Tehran Research Reactor. Then, in early 1974, I established the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran.
In early 1973, Tehran was all set for an over-ambitious program.
Good evening. The Middle East war produced developments all over the world today. The oil-producing countries of the Arab world decided to use their oil as a political weapon.
The Arabs' extensive oil sanctions at the end of the 1973 October War enabled the Shah of Iran to make pots of money in oil revenues in a market with no significant competition. A big plan was to be put into practice. American scientists at Stanford University had conducted major research based on which Iran had to generate thousands of megawatts of electricity via nuclear power plants if it was to fulfill its development programs by the year 1990. Soon after, many Western companies eager to establish power plants in Iran entered into contracts with the Atomic Energy Organization, steered then by Dr. Akbar Etemad.
Well, we managed to use the world's experience in accordance to our country's potential. By the same token, we chose some techniques. Anyway, we signed a contract with German companies to build two nuclear power plants. We also signed a contract with France to build two more nuclear power plants. The power of these four plants is estimated to be 4,200 megawatts, which is more than the current amount of the country's electricity. Obviously, it's just a start. We're doing research on how many power plants we must build. We would negotiate a contract with German and French companies if they do their job satisfactorily. This way, we will be able to produce 25,000 megawatts of atomic electricity.
Be 25,000 megawatts of atomic electricity.
29 years had passed since the U.S. dropped its first atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and it was quite natural if many equated atoms with massacre and mass destruction. Up until then, the U.S. had done its best to prevent other countries from having access to this lethal weapon.
It is essential that no country gain ascendancy over the United States in the development, manufacture, and tactical use of atomic weapons.
But it took the Soviet Union, China, England, and France only 8 years to join the nuclear club. What the U.S. had done in Japan portrayed a terrifying image of the atom that couldn't be easily erased from the world's collective memory. The U.S. needed a plan to rehabilitate itself. The Atom for Peace plan then came to be.
Against the dark background of the atomic bomb, the United States pledges before the world its determination to help solve the fearful atomic dilemma, to devote its entire heart and mind to find the way by which the miraculous inventiveness of man shall not be dedicated to his death, but consecrated to his life.
As a weapon to kill human beings, there's a certain subconscious guilt that got involved with the American psyche. And the response to that was what President Dwight Eisenhower did in December of 1953. He went to the United Nations and said that we want to make the atomic energy a gift to the world so that everybody will benefit from this for the generation of power. And that was motivated primarily, I think, subconsciously by guilt.
During the late 40s, and especially in the early 50s, the world was fascinated and enthusiastic about this nuclear technology. There was a kind of mood that this new technology could have wonderful possibilities. It was an era when lots of science fiction movies were made, and there was a belief that atomic energy was going to be a wonderful thing. And since the Soviet Union already had the bomb anyway by that time, President Eisenhower wanted to promote its use for peaceful purposes.
15 years after Eisenhower's speech, the Non-Proliferation Treaty was proposed to the UN. The treaty had three main clauses. One, gradual nuclear disarmament worldwide. Two, the non-proliferation of nuclear weaponry. And three, the right for all countries to have peaceful nuclear programs. The International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, was tasked to oversee the treaty.
Well, there was also a tremendous worry and concern, not only in the United States, but around the world, about the proliferation of nuclear weapons, because after, especially the Soviet Union developed it, and then later, I think, Britain, and then Japan and France developed it, there was a sincere regard, sincere concern that this was going to spread to other countries. So the Non-Proliferation Treaty was at least a way of trying, people thought, since the United States had such immense nuclear power, to keeping it in the hands of those who already had it, which meant at that time securing American nuclear hegemony or American nuclear preeminence in that field.
The NPT membership was on a voluntary basis, so those countries that intended to have nuclear weaponry evaded the treaty slyly. As a result, Israel, India, Pakistan, and finally North Korea joined those in possession of the weaponry. But Iran, under the Shah, signed onto the treaty.
It's important to remember that the first proposal for nuclear technology in Iran was actually made by the United States when the Shah was in power.
Well, we persuaded the Shah, who was our puppet. We controlled him. We sold him airplanes. We sold him munitions. He didn't need to. Nobody was going to attack Iran. But this is a way where our military-industrial complex makes money. So lo and behold, we established a nuclear industry in Iran.
Despite being a signatory to the NPT, even the existing ambiguity in the Shah's atomic plan didn't put a brake on Iran to enter forbidden districts, such as completing the nuclear fuel cycle.
در زمینه سوخت اتمی که واقعا شاید از تمام مسائل بارنجتر و مهمتر باشه.
As for atomic fuel, which is the most difficult part of the project, we have tried hard. I dare say that last year we mainly focused on atomic fuel. We also got engaged in uranium enrichment. The media covered the news. A big factory is to be built in France, and we bought 10% of its shares. So we will have 10% of the factory's production, which meet part of our needs. We're negotiating with other countries, and we will probably do the same thing in the USA. Anyway, we will find a proper way to enrich uranium. We're also studying another field that has to do with atomic fuel, which is even more important than uranium enrichment. It demands advanced technology. We intend to be independent of other countries in having access to the complete cycle of nuclear fuel.
But an event in the winter of 1979 took the world by surprise and threatened the US and European countries' interests in the Middle East.
Islamic Republic of Iran is considered a threat, not so much by the United States, but by the pro-Israel lobby in the United States, because Iran, the Islamic Republic, is dangerous for the interests of Israel for two main reasons. First of all, the Islamic Republic is steadfast, principled, categorical in its support for Palestinian resistance against Israeli Zionist oppression, occupation. That's, and the Islamic Republic is steadfast about that. That's almost an article of faith as part of the revolution of 1979. And second, consistent with that, the Islamic Republic, as an Islamic Republic, is, as a model, a dangerous thing for Israel. It means that other countries may follow the example of Iran, and likewise have policies which are going to be steadfast and strong in support of Palestinian resistance to Israel. And that's harmful to Israeli interests.
After the Islamic Revolution of Iran, Western companies that had signed contracts with the Atomic Energy Organization began to suspend or terminate their contracts. Then Saddam Hussein invaded Iran. The invasion brought Iran's nuclear program to a halt for nearly a decade. As the war ended, the wheel of Iran's nuclear industry began to turn again. No one thought that resuming nuclear activities, this time by Iranian scientists, would be interpreted as a war of honor by the West. But the unthinkable just happened.
But the West, see, what the West doesn't like about Iran is it's independent.